Now it looks like William Barr himself is coming to the podium in a suit, red tie, with his glasses. He's got a red folder that he's putting on the lectern in front, and let's listen.
Good morning, everybody, and thanks for being here this morning. As you know, on March 22nd, Special Counsel Robert Mueller concluded his investigation into matters related to Russian attempts to interfere in our 2016 presidential election, and he submitted his confidential report to me pursuant to department regulations. As I said during my Senate confirmation hearing and since, I'm committed to ensuring the greatest degree possible of transparency concerning the special counsel's investigation, consistent with the law. At 11 this morning, I'm going to transmit copies of the public version of the special counsel's report to the chairman and ranking members of the Senate and House Judiciary Committees. The Department of Justice will also make the report available to the American people by posting it on the department's website after it has been delivered to Congress. I'd like to make a few comments today on the report. Before I do that, I want to thank Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein for joining me here today and for his assistance and counsel throughout this process. Rod, as you know, has served at the department for nearly 30 years with dedication and distinction, and it's been a great privilege and pleasure for me to work with him since my confirmation. He had well-deserved plans to step back from public service that were interrupted by my asking him to help in my transition. Rod has been an invaluable partner, and I am grateful that he is willing to help me and has been able to see the special counsel's investigation through to its conclusion. Thanks, Rod.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'd also like to thank Special Counsel Robert Mueller for his service and the thoroughness of his investigation, particularly his work exposing the nature of Russia's attempts to interfere in our electoral process. As you know, one of the primary purposes of the Special Counsel's investigation was to determine whether President Trump's campaign or any individual associated with it conspired or coordinated with the Russian government to interfere in the 2016 election. Volume 1 of the Special Counsel's report describes the results of that investigation. As you will see, the Special Counsel's report states that his, quote, investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. I am sure that all Americans share my concern about the efforts of the Russian government to interfere in our presidential election. As the special counsel report makes clear, the Russian government sought to interfere in our election process. But thanks to the special counsel's thorough investigation, we now know that the Russian operatives who perpetrated these schemes did not have the cooperation of President Trump or the Trump campaign, or the knowing assistance of any other American, for that matter. That is something that all Americans can and should be grateful to have confirmed. The special counsel report outlines two main efforts by the Russian government to influence the 2016 election. First, the report details efforts by the Internet Research Agency, a Russian company with close ties to the Russian government, to sow social discord among American voters through disinformation and social media operations. Following a thorough investigation of this disinformation campaign, the special counsel brought charges in federal court against several Russian nationals and entities for their respective roles in this scheme. Those charges remain pending, and the individual defendants remain at large. But the special counsel found no evidence that any American, including anyone associated with the Trump campaign, conspired or coordinated with the Russian government or the IRA in this illegal scheme. Indeed, as the report states, quote, the investigation did not identify evidence that any U.S. person knowingly or intentionally coordinated with the IRA's interference operation, unquote. Put another way, the special counsel found no collusion by any Americans in IRA's illegal activities. Second, the report details efforts by the Russian military officials associated with the GRU, the Russian Military Intelligence Organization, to hack into computers and steal documents and emails from individuals associated with the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton's campaign for the purpose of eventually publicizing these documents. Obtaining such unauthorized following a thorough investigation of these hacking operations, the special counsel brought charges in federal court against several Russian military officers for their respective roles in these illegal hacking operations. Those charges are still pending, and the defendants remain at large. But again, the special counsel's report did not find any evidence that members of the Trump campaign or anyone associated with the campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in these hacking operations. In other words, there was no evidence of the Trump campaign collusion with the Russian government's hacking. The special counsel's investigation also examined Russian efforts to publish stolen emails and documents on the internet. The special counsel found that after the GRU disseminated some of the stolen documents to entities that it controlled, DC Leaks and Guccifer II, the GRU transferred some of the stolen materials to WikiLeaks for publication. WikiLeaks then made a series of document dumps. The special counsel also investigated whether any member or affiliate of the Trump campaign encouraged or otherwise played a role in these dissemination efforts. Under applicable law, publication of these types of material would not be criminal unless the publisher also participated in the underlying hacking conspiracy. Here, too, the special counsel's report did not find that any person associated with the Trump campaign illegally participated in the dissemination of the materials. Finally, the special counsel investigated a number of links or contacts between the Trump campaign officials and individuals connected with the Russian government during the 2016 presidential campaign. After reviewing these contacts, the special counsel did not find any conspiracy to violate U.S. law involving Russian-linked persons and any persons associated with the Trump campaign. So that's the bottom line. After nearly 2 years of investigation, thousands of subpoenas, hundreds of warrants, and witness interviews, the special counsel confirmed that the Russian government sponsored efforts to illegally interfere with the 2016 presidential election, but did not find that the Trump campaign or other Americans colluded in those efforts. After finding no underlying collusion with Russia, the special counsel's report goes on to consider whether certain actions of the president could amount to obstruction of the special counsel's investigation. As I addressed in my March 24th letter, the special counsel did not make a traditional prosecutorial judgment regarding this allegation. Instead, the report recounts 10 episodes involving the president and discusses potential legal theories for connecting those activities to the elements of an obstruction offense. After carefully reviewing the facts and legal theories outlined in the report and in consultation with the Office of Legal Counsel and other department lawyers, the Deputy Attorney General and I concluded that the evidence developed by the special counsel is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offense. Although the Deputy Attorney General and I disagreed with some of the special counsel's legal theories and felt that some of the episodes examined did not amount to obstruction as a matter of law, we did not rely solely on that in making our decision. Instead, we accepted the special counsel's legal framework for purposes of our analysis and evaluated the evidence as presented by the special counsel in reaching our conclusions. In assessing the president's actions discussed in the report, it is important to bear in mind the context. President Trump faced an unprecedented situation. As he entered into office and sought to perform his responsibilities as president, federal agents and prosecutors were scrutinizing his conduct before and after taking office and the conduct of some of his associates. At the same time, there was relentless speculation in the news media about the president's personal culpability. Yet, as he said from the beginning, there was, in fact, no collusion. And as the special counsel's report acknowledges, there is substantial evidence to show that the president was frustrated and angered by his sincere belief that the investigation was undermining his presidency, propelled by his political opponents, and fueled by illegal leaks. Nonetheless, the White House fully cooperated with the special counsel's investigation, providing unfettered access to campaign and White House documents, directing senior aides to testify freely, and asserting no privilege claims. And at the same time, the president took no act that in fact deprived the special counsel of the documents and witnesses necessary to complete his investigation. Apart from whether the acts were obstructive, this evidence of non-corrupt motives weighs heavily against any allegation that the president had a corrupt intent to obstruct the investigation. Now, before I take questions, I want to address a few aspects of the process for producing the public report that I am releasing today. As I said several times, the report contains limited redactions related to four categories of information. To ensure as much transparency as possible, those redactions have been clearly labeled so that the readers can tell which redactions correspond to which categories. Now, to recall, those categories are 6E material, grand jury material, information that the IC believes would disclose sources and methods, information that would impair the investigation and prosecution of other cases that are underway, and finally, information that implicates the privacy and reputational interests of peripheral third parties. As you will see, most of the redactions were compelled by the need to prevent harm to ongoing matters and to comply with court orders prohibiting the public disclosure of information bearing on ongoing investigations and criminal cases, such as the IRA case and the Roger Stone case. These redactions were applied by Department of Justice attorneys working closely together with attorneys from the special counsel's office, as well as the intelligence community, and prosecutors are handling the ongoing cases. The redactions are their work product. No redactions done by anybody outside this group. There were no redactions done by anybody outside this group. No one outside this group proposed any redactions, and no one outside the department has seen the unredacted report, with the exception of certain sections that were made available to IC, the intelligence community, for their advice on protecting intelligence sources and methods. Consistent with longstanding executive branch practice, the decision whether to assert executive privilege over any portion of the report rested with the President of the United States. Because the White House had voluntarily cooperated with the special counsel, significant portions of the report contain material over which the president could have asserted privilege, and he would have been well within his rights to do so. Following my March 29th letter, the Office of the White House Counsel requested the opportunity to review the redacted version of the report in order to advise the president on the potential invocation of privilege, which is consistent with longstanding practice. Following that review, the president confirmed that in the interest of transparency and full disclosure to the American people, he would not assert privilege over the special counsel's report. Accordingly, the public report I am releasing today contains redactions only for the four categories that I previously outlined, and no material has been redacted based on executive privilege. In addition, earlier this week, the President's personal counsel requested and was given the opportunity to read a final version of the redacted report before it was publicly released. That request was consistent with the practice followed under the Ethics in Government Act, which permitted individuals named in a report prepared by an independent counsel the opportunity to read the report before publication. The President's personal lawyers were not permitted to make and did not request any redactions. In addition to making the redacted report public, we are also working with Congress to accommodate their legitimate oversight interests with respect to the special counsel's investigation. We have been consulting with Chairman Graham and Chairman Nadler through this process, and we will continue to do so. Given the limited nature of the redactions, I believe that the publicly released report will allow every American to understand the results of the special counsel's investigation. Nevertheless, in an effort to accommodate congressional requests, we will make available, subject to appropriate safeguards, to a bipartisan group of leaders from several congressional committees, a version of the report with all redactions removed, except those relating to grand jury information. Thus, these members of Congress will be able to see all of the redacted material for themselves, with a limited exception of that which, by law, cannot be shared. I believe that this accommodation, together with my upcoming testimony before the Senate and House Judiciary Committees, will satisfy any need Congress has for information regarding the special counsel's investigation. Once again, I'd like to thank you for being here, and I will now have a few questions.
Mr. Attorney General, we don't have the report in hand, so could you explain for us the special counsel's articulated reason for not reaching a decision on obstruction of justice, and if it had anything to do with the department's longstanding guidance on not indicting a sitting president? And you say you disagreed with some of his legal theories. What did you disagree with him on?
I'd leave it to his description in the report, the special counsel's own articulation of why he did not want to make a determination as to whether or not there was an obstruction offense. But I will say that when we met with him, Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein and I met with him, along with Ed O'Callaghan, who is the principal associate deputy, on March 5th, we specifically asked him about the OLC opinion and whether or not he was taking the position that he would have found a crime but for the existence of the OLC opinion. And he made it very clear several times that that was not his position. He was not saying that but for the OLC opinion, he would have found a crime. He made it clear that he had not made the determination that there was a crime.
We're listening to Attorney General William Barr, special coverage from NPR News.
Given that, why did you and Mr. Rosenstein feel the need you had to take it to the next step to conclude that there was no crime, especially given that DOJ policy?
Well, the very prosecutorial function and all our powers as prosecutors, including the power to convene grand juries and the compulsory process that's involved there, is for one purpose and one purpose only. It's determine yes or no. Was alleged conduct criminal or not criminal? That is our responsibility, and that's why we have the tools we have. And we don't go through this process just to collect information and throw it out to the public. We collect this information, we use that compulsory process for the purpose of making that decision. And because the special counsel did not make that decision, we felt the department had to, and that was a decision by me and the Deputy Attorney General.
Yes. Or did the special counsel indicate that he wanted you to make the decision or that it should be left for Congress? And also, how do you respond to criticism you're receiving from congressional Democrats that you're acting more as a attorney for the president rather than as the chief law enforcement officer?
Well, Special Counsel Mueller did not indicate that his purpose was to leave the decision to Congress. I hope that was not his view, since we don't convene grand juries and conduct criminal investigations for that purpose. I didn't talk to him directly about the fact that we were making the decision, but I am told that his reaction to that was that it was my prerogative as Attorney General to make that decision.
Attorney General Barb Hatham here at Fox News. Hi there. Is there anything you can share today about your review of the genesis of the Russia investigation and whether assets have been provided to investigate?
No, today I'm really focused just on the process of releasing this report.
Senior Democrats in Congress have asked for Robert Mueller himself to testify. Robert Mueller remains a Justice Department employee as of this moment. Will you permit him to testify publicly to Congress?
I have no objection to Bob Mueller personally testifying.
Mr. Attorney General, it's not just Democrats who have questioned some of the process here. A Republican appointed judge on Tuesday said you have, quote, created an environment that has caused a significant part of the American public to be concerned about these redactions. You cleared the president on obstruction. The president is fundraising off of your comments about spying. And here you have remarks that are quite generous to the president, including acknowledging his feelings and his emotions. So what do you say to people on both sides of the aisle who are concerned that you are trying to protect the president?
Well, actually, the statements about his sincere beliefs are recognized in the report that there was substantial evidence for that. So I'm not sure what your basis is for saying that I am being generous to the president.
You face an unprecedented situation. It just seems like there's a lot of effort to go out of your way to acknowledge how this was.
Well, is there another precedent for it?
No, but it's unusual.
Okay, so unprecedented is an accurate description, isn't it?
Yes, but okay. What do you say to people who are concerned that you're trying to protect the president?
Eric? There's a lot of public interest in the absence of the special counsel and members of his team. Was he invited to join you up on the podium? Why is he not here? This is his report, obviously, that you're talking about today.
No, it's not.
It's a report he did for me as the Attorney General. He is required under the regulation to provide me with a confidential report. I'm here to discuss my response to that report and my decision, entirely discretionary, to make it public, since these reports are not supposed to be made public. That's what I'm here to discuss.
Propriety for you to come out and sort of what appears to be sort of spinning
the
report before the public gets a chance to read it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Looks like that's it from the Justice Department today, where William Barr, the Attorney General of the United States, has given some description of his process and some description of his conclusions on the special counsel's investigation and the Mueller report, which, just to repeat for those who had not heard, we expect to learn about a little bit later on this morning. Attorney General Barr said that at about 11 o'clock Eastern Time, so that's just a bit more than an hour from now, copies of this report, redacted somewhat, he says, will be transmitted to key congressional leaders, and that sometime after that, the Department of Justice will make the report available on a website so everyone can see it. We could reasonably expect that if there was any delay from the Department of Justice, that congressional leaders might take the lead in releasing this report. NPR's Susan Davis is among those who are here and have been listening along. What did you hear there, Sue, that struck you?
I will leave the legal conclusions to my colleagues, but I will say politically, I don't think that could have gone better for Donald Trump, for the presidency, and for this White House. Attorney General Barr unequivocally said repeatedly and on multiple occasions, absolutely no evidence that the president, his campaign, or any American, for that matter, in any way colluded with the Russian government to undermine the 2016 elections. That is consistent with the president's defense of himself throughout this entire process. And I think this is a good day for the president.
Remarkable bit of political messaging, although the attorney general surely would argue that it's not political messaging, but just a fact. There's a difference between colluding with someone and being criminally liable for conspiracy. We knew the Mueller report found no criminal conspiracy, but it had been widely noted that that could be different than colluding with the Russians. Barr went ahead and went farther today, didn't he? He said there's no collusion. He used the very two words that the president himself has used again and again and again in his defense.
He did. He put a period at the end of that sentence. And I think, again, I'm not speaking to the legal terms. I'm speaking to the political terms. I believe the White House will view this and his party will view this as a complete political exoneration of the president.
Okay, we have much more to discuss here, and we will continue throughout the morning and throughout the day. But again, reviewing, Attorney General William Barr says there is no criminal conspiracy. He justified his decision not to charge charge the president or anyone else with obstruction of justice, that there was no collusion, and that the full Mueller report or a fuller version of the report will be available to the public a little later on today. And this is special coverage from NPR News continuing here. Let's just go through a few of the quotes, a few of the findings of Attorney General William Barr. He not only found that there was no criminal conspiracy, not only found that there was no obstruction, but went into a discussion at one point of the president's feelings, the president's emotions. NPR's Ryan Lucas, we've just got a few seconds here to dive into this, but he said he wanted to put the president's acts in context.
Well, what he said was that essentially Mueller's report took that into context, looking at the question of obstruction of justice. And the president had said from the beginning that there was no collusion, that he grew frustrated and angered that this report was hanging over his presidency. So it did take that into consideration in a look at this.
And let me just stop you for a second, because some of our stations will cut away. Perhaps others will stay with us. And we're going to continue our discussion here of what we have learned and what we have yet to learn here on NPR News. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep in Washington, D.C., where we've just been listening to Attorney General William Barr. He gave a live news conference. I would describe his tone, NPR's Ryan Lucas, as measured. He was quiet in terms of just tone, not words, trying to sound reasonable, trying to sound as if the conclusions that he was drawing were fairly obvious. And he pushed back against the notion by one reporter that he was effectively being, quote, very generous, quite generous to the president in taking into consideration his emotions, his feelings, that he was under attack by the media, that he felt frustrated, that he was being unfairly criticized, and therefore, although Barr did not quite finish the thought, therefore perhaps was justified in being so obstructive and firing his FBI director and taking any number of other actions. Barr, however, responded he wasn't defending the president, just stating the facts.
That's right. And, you know, we have seen, obviously, the president's frustration over the past
This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep in Washington, D.C., where we've just been listening to Attorney General William Barr. He gave a live news conference. I would describe his tone, NPR's Ryan Lucas, as measured. He was quiet in terms of just tone, not words, trying to sound reasonable, trying to sound as if the conclusions that he was drawing were fairly obvious. And he pushed back against the notion by one reporter that he was effectively being, quote, very generous, quite generous to the president in taking into consideration his emotions, his feelings, that he was under attack by the media, that he felt frustrated, that he was being unfairly criticized, and therefore, although Barr did not quite finish the thought, therefore perhaps was justified in being so obstructive and firing his FBI director and taking any number of other actions. Barr, however, responded he wasn't defending the president, just stating the facts.
That's right. And, you know, we have seen, obviously, the president's frustration over the past 2 years with this. It's kind of become a common refrain about how he viewed this as a witch hunt. He frequently said that there was no collusion. Taking that into consideration in this speech today that Barr gave, I think is probably going to provide a lot of ammunition for Democrats and their ongoing concerns about how Barr has handled this, feelings that he is trying to kind of bake in a narrative, as the Democratic chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jerry Nadler, said last night. At the same point in time, Barr did deal with a lot of other aspects of Mueller's report. The problem right now is that he's talking about a report that we still haven't seen. We're still waiting to dig in ourselves.
Well, bearing that in mind, Ryan Lucas, let's think through something that the Attorney General said, the very precise way in which he said it, and something that he did not say. He began talking about one way that, perhaps the single largest way that Russian interference could have affected the course of the 2016 election, and that was stolen emails that became a large part of the campaign narrative and a great deal of what the media talked about, what the public talked about. William Barr noted that there was a Russian agency that was blamed for stealing emails, sharing them with some hackers, then sharing them with WikiLeaks. You'll correct me if I get some details wrong here. Sharing them with WikiLeaks, which then released them to the public.
Right.
Then the question is, did someone with the Trump campaign take part in that nefarious Russian-based scheme? Barr says a couple of things in a row. First, he says, well, this is not a crime to publish stolen emails unless you actively participated in the theft. And then he says, no one associated with the Trump campaign illegally participated in that action. He didn't say no one from the Trump campaign participated. He just said no one illegally participated in that action.
Well, there are a couple of things here. One, we can remember that Roger Stone, a longtime informal advisor of the president, has been indicted as for essentially what the indictment gets into is acting as a sort of middleman between WikiLeaks and the Trump campaign. The charges actually relate to lying to Congress, not about his
stolen emails.
What was interesting, I think, in Barr's press conference about this is he rattled off in a number of spots, no collusion, no collusion, no coordination, no conspiracy. And then he got to this point about the dissemination of these emails. And as you noted, there was a very noticeable change in rhythm. And he gets onto this into this phrase of under applicable law, publication is not criminal unless the publisher actually took part in the hacking conspiracy. So, yes, we may learn, and this speaks more broadly to this report and all 400 pages of it, we may learn about more derogatory information, things that raise questions about how people within the president's circle, within the Trump campaign, acted that doesn't necessarily rise to the level of criminal activity.
NPR's Mara Liasson is here with us. Mara.
You know, the other thing that's important about this, no illegal participation in the dissemination. Roger Stone aside, the president of the United States publicly at a rally said, Russia, if you're listening, please hack Hillary's emails.
Yeah.
He said over and over again, he promoted WikiLeaks. He said how much he loved them. He encouraged people to read them. So he disseminated them.
Although he now says
them,
he doesn't know anything about WikiLeaks. Well, but yes, go on.
But,
yes,
yeah. But none of that was illegal. And that was the task of Bob Mueller to see if the president broke any crimes. And just, you know, to pick up on Sue's point about politically, this is a great thing for the president. And I think it's important to say this report is very complex and is about a lot of things, including a counterintelligence operation about Russia interference. So this whole good for the president, bad for the president is just one layer of it. But the president did tweet today a poster, no collusion, no obstruction for the haters and the radical left Democrats, game over. And I'm assuming this is a Game of Thrones kind of typeface and image. It shows the president going into a bunch of steam. But okay. This is a triumphant day for him. And the fact that Bob Mueller used his language, no collusion, no collusion, there is no such crime as collusion. There is a crime of conspiracy and coordination, which Bob Mueller said he failed
to find
evidence.
Well, that's interesting. So there was no need for William Barr to go out of his way to use the president's own phrase, but he went ahead and did. Oh, you're raising a hand, Ryan Lucas.
Well, I think that the term collusion is something that is kind of spread across our media discussion and the public discussion. It's the word that the public has come to use about contacts that raise questions.
No, it's the word the president used inserted it into the media narrative about 10,000 times.
It's a word that has been used by the public broadly, including the president, but not solely the president, to describe contacts between the Trump campaign or possible illegal activity between the Trump campaign and the Russians. There has been concern among legal folks from the beginning that, yes, there is no crime collusion. It's shorthand for what essentially means conspiracy or illegal coordination. Whether Barr is using that to echo the president's words or whether he's using it to basically use the word that the public would understand what he's talking about, we don't know.
And we should be fair also and say he said he was citing the Mueller report in finding no collusion, although, yet again, we must note we have not seen the Mueller report. We cannot confirm that claim at this time.
I do think I think there is a broader point to be made here, too, especially because we have watched this so closely through the lens of politics with Republicans versus Democrats, with President Trump being a divisive president. But at the core here, Robert Mueller was investigating whether any American, up to and including the president of the United States, had worked with a foreign power to undermine an election. That is a huge question.
Mm-hmm.
And it was notable to me when Barr said today the fact that there was no evidence that any American at any point conspired with a foreign power to undermine our election. And he said that is something all Americans can and should be grateful to have confirmed. That is a good point. Now imagine the alternative scenario where if there had been evidence that fellow American citizens had worked to undermine an election. Think
horrifying.
About how corrosive that would be to democracy, to the question of our upcoming elections. I mean, that was a huge existential question for us. And we have no reason to believe the report will undermine what he just said. That is a fundamentally good thing.
And although he said knowing assistance. In other words, there might have been people who did it, but he said there was no knowing assistance by any American.
Ryan Lucas.
One thing to take a step back and kind of a 3-year look at this. It's the point that you make, Sue, about Barr is I think, noteworthy and important. At the same point in time, looking at what has transpired over the past 3 years and the way that this investigation and questions hanging over whether an American coordinated with a foreign power to undermine American elections, whether that happened, the way that this has eroded the democratic process here in the U.S., the way that Democrats and Republicans have been going after each other for 3 years, the divisive way that this has kind of split apart the American public, that is all a win for Russia.
Absolutely.
Mara Liasson, I want to follow up on a question that you posed before William Barr spoke. You said one of the questions that you would like to know the answer to is essentially, why did the president lie so much? Why did he make so many false statements? Why did he dictate himself, according to news reports, a statement that turned out to be false about a meeting with Russians involving his son and senior campaign officials? Do you feel you have any better sense of that after William Barr's statements?
No. I mean, there were so many instances, not just the president. Michael Flynn, his son. Why did so many people dissemble about contacts with Russia when what we're hearing today from Barr is that it's perfectly legal to invite the Russians to hack, to welcome the Russians hacking, so long as you don't knowingly assist them? In other words, all those other things are okay. They might be distasteful, but they're not illegal. So there are a lot of theories about why did the president and his team lie so often about Russia. One of them is that he feels in some way guilty, or there's some evidence out there that he has longstanding connections with Russia. Not that he committed a crime necessarily in the election, but that he has longstanding business ties with Russia. He owes tremendous amounts of money to Russian oligarchs. Who knows?
His lawyer also lied about the business.
And his lawyer lied about the business talks about building Trump Tower Moscow. So I think none of those questions are definitively answered, but it's a question that remains. And to the extent Congress wants to continue investigating all of these things, maybe there's stuff in the Mueller report that will help them.
I want to put on the table the way the attorney general spoke, his conduct, the way that he formed his sentences here, because I think it's important just to reflect on for a moment. We noted that he said no collusion. He said no crime committed. He said he concluded there was no obstruction, no American involved. One negative absolute sentence after another. One might note that this is the way that a defense lawyer would speak. If the president were on trial, for example, you don't say my client is a great person, hard to prove that. You say my client is not guilty.
Right.
So you could say the attorney general spoke like a defense lawyer, but you could also say the attorney general spoke the way an attorney general should speak, because his determination is whether there is a crime or there isn't a crime. You probably don't want your attorney general to be out there making a judgment as to whether your president or any American is a nice person or not a nice person.
Except for he cut off the questioning as soon as the questions got to his role. And whether or not he was defending the president, whether, you know, he was asked, why isn't Mueller here? And he said very definitively, he said, he's not here because the person said, it's his report. He said, no, it's my report. He did this report and delivered it to me.
There are a couple of factual things that we learned from Barr about the report in his comments today that don't involve his interpretation of what the report says. A report, of course, which we still have not seen. But actual things that just draw on facts. He said, for example, that it's broken into two parts, which we already knew. One part is about the question of possible coordination, conspiracy with the Russians. The second part is on whether the president obstructed justice. We got an additional detail on that. Barr said that the report looks at 10 episodes involving the president and potential legal theories around obstruction of justice.
10 episodes. So maybe the firing of James Comey, the FBI director, is one of them, but there's a bunch of others.
There are a bunch of others. And Barr has said previously that a lot of this is stuff that took place in public, but there may also be stuff that we don't know about. I'm very curious to see what these 10 episodes are, what more we can learn. And then we also learned that the president did not invoke executive privilege at any point in time with this report. Barr did explain contacts with the White House counsel's office about this report. They got to review a redacted version beforehand in order to see whether there was any need to invoke executive privilege. Ultimately, it was not.
You're listening to live special coverage of NPR News. I suppose I'm listening as well to NPR's Ryan Lucas here, along with NPR's Susan Davis and Mara Liasson. And we have been listening to Attorney General William Barr, who explained some of his conclusions and gave his version of the Mueller report that we still have not seen at this point. Let's listen to a little bit, for those who missed it, of what William Barr had to say a little bit earlier this morning.
We now know that the Russian operatives who perpetrated these schemes did not have the cooperation of President Trump or the Trump campaign, or the knowing assistance of any other American, for that matter.
Okay, so no knowing assistance of any other American. President Trump did not assist, the campaign did not assist, nor did any other American. And let's listen to a little bit more of what Barr had to say.
Here, too, the special counsel's report did not find that any person associated with the Trump campaign illegally participated in the dissemination of the materials.
That's referring to the hacked emails, the Democratic emails that, according to the special counsel's report, we're told were stolen by Russia and ultimately distributed by WikiLeaks. Again, Barr not denying that people in the Trump campaign may well have participated. He didn't say either way. He got around that, but he said no one illegally participated in that. I want to ask about a couple of figures who were behind the Attorney General of the United States as he spoke. One is a man named Ed O'Callaghan. He's a senior Justice Department official. I think his name did not come up. But the other one is a much more public figure. And the Attorney General went out of his way to name check him and thank him. Who is he, Ryan Lucas?
That would be Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who has really been kind of the man overseeing this investigation from the beginning, because back when this when the Trump administration first came in and this probe was ongoing, then Attorney General Jeff Sessions had to recuse himself from overseeing the Russia investigation because of his role in the campaign. Rosenstein became kind of the public face, the man who would discuss publicly this investigation. He was the one who had to go answer questions of Congress, and he frequently was berated by Republicans in Congress, in the last Congress, over Mueller's handling of the investigation, over the early days of this, over how the FBI and the Justice Department more generally have dealt with this. Now, Rosenstein is leaving the Justice Department shortly. It's not unusual for a deputy attorney general for only to be there for a couple of years. But again, he really has been the man overseeing Mueller and this investigation over its entirety.
Susan Davis, when I watched William Barr thank Rod Rosenstein, who's standing there behind him, there's a particular message that I perceive as being sent there. William Barr is saying, without quite saying it, look, I had the support, I had the active support of this credible guy who has been defending the investigation against all sorts of interference for a couple of years, and his conclusions are the same as mine. So if you don't believe me, you ought to believe him. My question is Rod Rosenstein at this point credible with Congress?
Yes, I believe he is. I don't believe that he is someone that the Congress has really turned their sights on to the extent that they have with the Attorney General. You know, there's always going to be a level with Democrats on Capitol Hill, a level of suspicion about anybody who goes and works for the Trump administration, particularly in the role of Attorney General, particularly considering all the attacks against the DOJ, about the way that the president has conducted himself in office. Barr entered that job with a baseline level of distrust among Democrats. I think that his handling, the optics of a lot of this, the release of the letter, the decision to have this press conference, has led Democrats like House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to question both his integrity and his intentions. That is why Democrats, I believe, have continued to call for Robert Mueller himself to come and testify. As Nancy Pelosi said, I don't trust Barr, I trust Mueller. Although to Ryan's point, too, when we will know soon as this report comes out, but Barr was pretty forthcoming that the report will be forthcoming. The fact that the president had the ability to exercise executive privilege and chose not to, the fact that he made the point that this will be a lightly redacted report was notable. The fact that he said that members of Congress will be given an unredacted version of the report with some material withheld. And also that he will be up to testify soon. He was also asked by NPR's Carrie Johnson if he had any problem with Robert Mueller going to testify on Capitol Hill, and he said he did not. So, you know,
he didn't object to Mueller personally testifying,
well,
whatever that means.
I'm not sure exactly what he means, but we do know that Robert Mueller is closing up shop here. That
might
he might be a private citizen very soon. But you add all those points up, and DOJ is you know, putting their cards on the table here. And I think that there that speaks to, I think, a level of trust in Mueller's conclusions. And also, you know, the White House could have intervened here more directly. They could have exerted executive privilege. They didn't. I think that speaks to the president's confidence that this report is not going to be a bad day for him.
Ryan Lucas, in the last minute we have before we take a break for to local stations, I want to just underline one thing. There is, of course, the question of Russia's participation in the 2016 election, something the president repeatedly denied and has dissembled about again and again. I think that's just a matter of record, not even a critical statement, just a fact. What did Barr say, William Barr say, Russia did in 2016?
Well, he talked about what the intelligence community has concluded, and we've known for several years from the U.S. spy agencies, but that Russia did hack into Democratic Party servers. They stole emails. They gave them to WikiLeaks, which then published them. And he also talked about the very intense social media campaign, the propaganda that Russians used to bombard Americans, one, to try to divide American voters, and also to just sow discord and some way, shape, or form influence the election.
So much more to discuss here. And of course, we have the publication of the Mueller report coming later today, and we'll cover that fully. Right now, we have Attorney General William Barr's statement, not only that there was no criminal conduct, but, quote, no collusion between President Trump, his campaign, and Russia. We will continue to bring you more as we learn it.